In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Over the years, we've interviewed plenty of people who have analyzed and studied and exposed the far left. We've talked with Ron Arnold, who followed the money of the environmentalists who successfully destroyed Oregon's timber industry, Joanne Nova, who exposed worldwide spending on global warming as a main funding mechanism for the far left, thanks to taxpayers around the globe. We've talked with Trevor Loudon, who exposes the secret communist ties among politicians and the communists hiding in our government, including and especially elected politicians. Ron Richlack, along with Lieutenant Ian Pacheppa, who exposed the Soviet Union's disinformation program and the million-plus agents they unleashed into American society, and too many others, such guests to list. But it's pretty rare that we get a chance to talk directly to someone who was a former activist on the left who personally worked for a far-left environmental movement, but who finally woke up and got out. So I'm going to forgo my usual opener to get right to our guest. I'd like to welcome Farrelly Nelson to the show. She is a former activist with Earth First and others, but she is now a Christian and fighting to expose the far left. Farrelly, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So going into this, I know we have so many questions that I just know that we're going to have you back. But to get us started, talk to our audience about your origin story, your family upbringing, and what hooked you into the left.
Sure. So I had a very unconventional upbringing. My mother and father were actually nomadic for a lot of my childhood. We lived in tents, buses. I was even homeless for a little bit of time. But we traveled across the United States primarily in an old blue school bus that my parents had retrofitted into kind of a somewhat of a tiny home. And most of my childhood memories were of Deadhead concerts and being out in the middle of nowhere where the nearest town was, I don't know, maybe 50 to 100 miles away. And believe it or not, even though my parents were quote unquote hippies and were very non-traditional, they raised us with Christian values. So my mother had seven kids, six of us at home. And we were raised with Bible stories mixed in with a lot of New Age philosophy. So it was a little bit confusing. My mom had crystals everywhere and drums and tarot cards, but we also learned a lot about the Bible and about God. And it wasn't really until I was 12 years old that I was exposed to the quote-unquote radical left. I was living on a intentional community at the time. We called that a hippie commune back in the 80s. And at the age of 12, I began associating with a group of young adults that were on the in the community, and they were from the Earth First organization. And a few years later, at the age of 14, was the height of the spotted owl controversy in Southern Oregon in Josephine County. And I had been hanging out with these young adults for quite a while, and I thought that they were really interesting people. I thought that they were, very, very tuned in to what was going on with animals, with the earth. I was a vegetarian. I really cared about animals. And they kind of sucked me into their group because it was very seductive. They were all about the environment, all about protecting animals and the earth. And so I thought these people really care about what's going on, and I immediately latched on to them. Now, Earth First motto is no compromise in defense of Mother Earth.
Right.
So my passion for protecting the forest led to actions like burying myself in clay barricades, chaining myself to trees and logging equipment. And even though I didn't personally do this myself, people in our group were spiking trees.
Right.
Um, And I didn't realize at the time that these spikes could injure or even kill unsuspecting loggers that were just trying to put food on their family's table. But because I was so passionate about protecting the environment and so unwielding in my need to save the planet, I felt like the actions that the fellow people of my group were doing were justified.
Right.
Even though I didn't realize it would actually kill people, I heard about spikes and I thought that they were a good thing.
Well,
because they were keeping people away from the trees.
Sure. So as you got deeper into this movement and you got into adulthood and joined officially Earth First and some of these other organizations,
mm-hmm.
how far did you go? I mean, is it fair to call you a former communist? Well, actually, let's do it this way. On the spectrum of the left, with one being, just left of moderate slash center and 10 being full-fledged mm-hmm. Chinese Communist Party members seeking world domination, where would you rank yourself when you were at your furthest left?
So I would rank myself probably not as far as a Maoist or like the Chinese Communist Party, but definitely I considered myself a communist. I actually first started looking into socialism in a real way in college. I studied international studies, Spanish and Japanese and journalism. And I started kind of moving a little bit away from the environmental movement in terms of my passion towards social justice, because that's the next natural movement is, you protect animals and the earth, and then you've got to protect the people. And so I became very, very hyper-focused on social justice issues. And the patriarchy and capitalism and how free markets were destroying the earth and extracting its resources and oppressing its people.
Right.
And so I started getting really involved in the political side of things. And at that time, I would consider myself like maybe sophomore, junior year in college, I would consider myself a socialist. And as I started studying socialism, I came to the understanding myself that communism was really the only way through this,
so
that we needed to disperse the wealth, that there were too few people who had too much, and we needed to, and it was essentially putting the vast majority of the people in poverty.
Right.
And
okay,
Well,
actually, let me go ahead and interrupt you there. We're coming up on a break here. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Farrelly Nelson and her journey out of communism. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the ICY Radio Show. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Farrelly Nelson. She's a former far-left activist, a communist, really, who woke up and defected the conservative movement. And today's show is letting us peek behind the curtain at what the left is really all about. So let's talk about the organization that you had mentioned that you joined, Earth First. I mean, things are pretty bad when even far-left-leaning Wikipedia calls it, quote, a radical environmental organization. But the following I'd like to read is from Activist Facts, a website from the Nonprofit Center for Organizational Research and Education, which is dedicated to research and education about a wide variety of activist groups exposing their funding agendas and tactics. And if you'd like to find that link, just head to icebyradio.com. We'll have it on today's show page, which is 13-24. So it says this: Earth First is a warrior society. It takes a by any means necessary approach to defending Mother Earth. The group declines to participate in the democratic process, preferring instead to damage, disable, and destroy the property of its ever-growing list of enemies, which you alluded to earlier. So Earth First targets include, but are by no means limited to, loggers, ranchers, and farmers, especially those who grow genetically modified crops. Earth First's crimes include assault, arson, and untold acts of sabotage. So did I miss anything in terms of the scope of what they do there?
No, that's pretty accurate.
Okay.
And at the time that I was involved with them, which was mostly before college, because once I started going to the University of Oregon, my interest kind of shifted from radical environmentalism to social justice. But yes, I absolutely hated loggers. I hated I hated conservatives because I associated them with the logging movement. I hated Republicans because I also associated them with capitalism and with the overall system that was destroying the planet. And so in my mind, the radical steps that Earth First were taking to protect the planet was justified.
It seems weird to think that you got involved in the University of Oregon and somehow that de-radicalized you slightly. But anyway, I do
want
to spend...
Not really.
Yeah, I know. It shifted your radicalism instead. Yeah. So
right.
I do want to spend a little bit of time looking at this organization because I think it's a good example of how the left operates. Because according to some other former insiders, Earth First was a spinoff from two respectable leftist organizations, the Sierra Club and the Wilderness Society. Dave Foreman, the founder of Earth First, was allegedly approached by the Sierra Club and Wilderness Society, whom he worked for at the time, with an offer to fund a new extremist point group, the point being to make the Sierra Club's and Wilderness Society's own demands seem more reasonable by comparison to the out-of-control group Earth First. So can you comment on that, and especially the tactic of using these kinds of ruses by the left to accomplish their real goals?
Sure. I can only really comment from the frame of reference from a teenager. I was never high up in the ranks of the organization. I was just a volunteer going to protests and being a part of that world. But I would say, as somebody who was participating, that there wasn't, from the perspective of the group, there wasn't enough happening with groups like the Sierra Club or groups that were focusing more on legislation and maybe lobbying, but not actual direct action. And so Earth First took it upon themselves to, you know, be boots on the ground and actually put themselves physically in front of these loggers and in front of the work that was being done. And I think that that is kind of where a lot of the radical roots stemmed, was with this direct approach of being in your face and going directly to these people instead of trying to stop things in a legal way. Does that make sense?
I think so. As far as like setting up these kind of ruse organizations, is that something that you would say is typical of the left? That, you know, you've got a quasi respectable group, or, you know, at least on the surface, you know, somebody like the Wilderness Society or Sierra Club, they don't seem too radical. But would you say that that is a tactic of the left, where you've got those respectable organizations, but secretly they're funding some of these radical ones?
Oh, absolutely. All the time. Yes. Even when I was working with Greenpeace, which we'll talk about later, direct action is a huge part of what a lot of these left organizations or left-leaning organizations do. And it very much targets the youth and getting the youth out there, and a lot of times putting themselves in harm's way in order to forward an agenda that they might not even understand.
You had mentioned that you were anti-logging, and it's been my experience that a lot of people who are also anti-logging tend to only focus on the destructive side of things. They see clear-cutting and, oh my gosh, this is just horrible, rather than focusing on the full life cycle of a forest and the beneficial aspects of logging, like the rebirth, the regrowth, and getting out the dead wood and how that cleans the forest themselves. How much does the left depend on people not knowing and being poorly informed on issues?
Oh, 100%. In fact, I am no longer anti-logging, but at the time I was vehemently anti-logging. And it was essentially exactly what you just said. I didn't understand that a healthy forest depends on proper management, proper thinning, removal of underbrush, looking out for diseases and removing possible pest infestations, removing hazard trees. I didn't know about any of that. The environmental movement has been weaponized, and they play on people's emotions. And this is very key to the left and the tactics of the left, is they don't really rely too much on facts or logic. They appeal to people's emotions. They appeal to the fact that a lot of young people especially are really concerned about the environment, and they really, really play on that in order to poison their minds and suck them into this tribe in order to continue to put their ideology on people. And it 100% depends on people's knowledge of an issue. And unfortunately, people that are younger don't have the full spectrum or the full worldview. They have to kind of learn as they go.
Sure. Well, real quick, had you known the facts about logging, do you think that would have completely changed your mind back then? I mean, would you have been out there protesting logging had you known the full cycle?
I don't think I would have, because I actually ran into one of my friends, this is kind of off topic, but I ran into one of my friend's parents a little while back, who had been in organizations like Earth First, and she was a very radical environmentalist like I was. And she actually now works with loggers as a forest management person, essentially. And she's completely shifted her views on the forest and on logging, because she realized that unless we come together as environmentalists and loggers, that nothing positive will happen. We have to work together. And so I think that if I would have had a mentor, somebody who was able to explain it to me in a way that she did as a young person, that I would have absolutely taken a different stance.
Isn't that interesting? Okay, let's go and take a break there. Come back, we'll have more with Fairleigh Nelson. She left the left. Coming up, we'll be talking about what got her out. We are talking today with Fairleigh Nelson. She is a former far-left activist who woke up and is now trying to wake people up in the conservative movement to what they're facing. And today's show is giving us a peek behind the curtain, so to speak, in terms of how the left operates. And, you know, we were talking during the break there about how hard the left works to keep kids in the dark, because if they had the facts and the information, they wouldn't likely be part of the left. And you said that this was a purposeful effort. So can you talk to our audience a little bit about that in terms of just working so hard to keep kids out, keep information away from kids?
Well, I think most people understand now that Hollywood, the music industry, the role models that a lot of children look up to are all very left-leaning. And this is done on purpose. And so children that are looking up to these people, they automatically start associating themselves with these worldviews, because that is what all of their role models are saying. And so essentially it starts young, and it's a covert psychological operation, and people don't even realize that they're being brought over to the left because they're literally immersed and surrounded by it. You know, you don't see Jesus on every television station. You don't hear conservative values and Christian values on every radio station. And so the left, it has found a way into every aspect of society. And we don't even realize it. A lot of people don't even realize it. And back to children and kind of choosing which worldview they have, it's not really a choice. It's been pushed on us. Go ahead and repeat your question again, because we can go back to there.
Sure. Well, basically what I was asking was, and I think you mostly answered it, which is, you know, how do they purposefully keep kids away from the information that they wouldn't want them to be exposed to? And, you know, we had earlier talked about logging, and if you had had better information, you would not have gone that way.
Right.
So how do they work to keep, what methods do they use to keep information away from kids?
Sure. And kind of along those lines of, you know, role models and Hollywood and things like that, it is an appeal to emotion. So when you have somebody like Greta Thunberg or, you know, Megan Fox or any of these people that people, that are recognized talking about the environment and talking about social justice issues, that is who the kids are going to latch onto. And there's so much advertising and media around environmentalism and social justice. It's insane. And then you have all of the quote unquote woke corporations that are promoting environmentalist agendas, social justice agendas. It's all based on emotion.
Yeah.
It's all based on, you have to do the right thing because this is what all the cool kids are saying we should do. So, you know, we have to follow this agenda. We have to toe the line. And so it's not even necessarily that they have to keep the facts from people, but they're promoting another agenda so overwhelmingly that is what people pay attention to. It's bright. It's shiny. Everybody's talking about it. They don't even, kids aren't really interested in reading reports and going into the facts of things.
Well,
but if they're, go ahead.
Or I was just going to say, well, some kids are that way. Some of them, fortunately, are still logical and looking for facts, but
right.
That is definitely the rare thing. I know that you have moved out of the left only just a few years ago.
Correct.
Looking back at that, what is happening now with all of a sudden this just massive explosion in terms of embracing transgender and, oh my gosh, if you're not transgender, don't you want to be? And all of this push on our kids down to the youngest ages where they're trying to push pornography into schools. I mean, this sort of stuff used to be anathema to everybody, no matter which side of the aisle you were on. Leave kids alone and give them their innocence and whatnot. Looking back at that, does that surprise you at how quickly this has taken hold just in the last few years?
It does and it doesn't. I think that I was just inside of that world for so long that I was seeing the progression forward towards, gay marriage and then transgender rights and then hormone blockers for kids. And when I was in that world, I didn't think that anything was weird or wrong. And it was just the natural progression of things. I was staunchly pro-choice up until a few years ago when the Project Veritas videos came out, which blew my mind and made me really start evaluating the views that I held around abortion. I'm staunchly pro-life now. but it was really not until a few years ago that I started questioning certain aspects of my worldview. The same with transgenderism. It's not until recently that I actually started looking at it more deeply in terms of, this isn't, they're literally doing drag shows for infants and for toddlers. And if there was a female stripper, for example, doing the same thing that a lot of these drag queens were doing in front of children, they would go to jail. And that was really shocking to me when I started seeing Drag Queen Story Hour popping up at all these different places like Barnes & Noble, the local library. And then I started looking at it a lot deeper that all of these different corporations in our country are supporting this even at the risk of losing billions of dollars. And I started thinking about it in terms of no business model will do something because they know that they will lose billions of dollars at their bottom line. Yeah. There has to be another agenda here.
Yeah.
And these drag queens and these LGBTQIA2S celebrities are being artificially propped up because of an agenda.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
Yeah, let's go ahead and take a break there. Stay with us. So much more to talk about with Farrahleigh Nelson. Her organization is Unify Oregon. How did she decide to leave the left is up next. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Farrelly Nelson. She is a former far-left activist, a former communist, who finally woke up and is now trying to wake people up in the conservative movement to what they're facing. And so let's actually start talking about what did wake you up. You had mentioned previously that you were very pro-choice, and now, of course, you're pro-life. And some of that was because of the Project Veritas videos. You know, nobody ever wakes up all in one shot, usually. So I know there were several stages. So let's talk about that one first.
Yeah. So the Project Veritas was actually a really big part of my awakening to the evils of the left, and to the fact that abortion is this sanitized term that we use to describe a horrific practice.
Mm-hmm.
And the killing of babies. It isn't anything else. It's murder. And because I was so sucked into the tribe of the left, you kind of identify with everything that the left identifies with, because if you deviate even a little bit, you essentially are an outsider. So if you, you know, think that, you know, gay marriage is okay, and, you know, protecting the environment is really important, but yet you're pro-life, you're automatically ostracized from that group. And so it's a scary thing to lose your tribe, to lose the people that you're connected with. And when I started actually looking into these issues, it was a little bit scary because I didn't really have anyone that I could talk to about it. And during COVID was when I was really starting to look at my values that I held and how that reflected me as a person.
And what ways exactly?
Alone.
Yeah. How did COVID help?
So, right. So essentially I had a lot of time to myself because we were isolated. But I was also studying to be a doctor, to be a dentist at that point. I was waiting for my acceptance to Oregon Health Sciences University. And when I had gotten accepted, they had actually waived my pre-matriculation vaccine requirements because I was vaccine injured in 2005. But then they essentially told me that I would be kicked out of my program if I didn't take the shot because they couldn't guarantee my graduation. That's a whole nother story by itself. But I felt very isolated and alone because none of my friends could actually identify with what I was going through because they just said, well, just take the shot. Just take it. I mean, you're committing a crime basically by not taking the shot. And I was just felt very ostracized by the community that I was where I was going to school and also my friends. I have friends that were, you know, the maid of honor at my wedding that don't even talk to me because of these issues, because she's so far left and she can't identify with me moving away from a lot of the values that she holds. And I was sitting on my couch in my living room and I was fumbling around with this pocket Bible that somebody had given me. I don't even know where I got it. And I was just feeling really, really alone. And I was contemplating all the evils in the world, like the transgender agenda, like abortion, like what was happening with the vaccine mandates in my personal life. And all of a sudden, this warmth just overcame me, and I felt like just surrounded by light. And it was that moment that Jesus came to me and told me that I could take all the burdens that I had on my shoulders and give them over to him. And it was that moment in my life that I truly believed and understood what people had said to me about Jesus and the unconditional love and the gratitude that they feel once they've allowed Jesus into their lives. And that was a real turning point for me in terms of the way that I saw the world. And I started gravitating more towards the Christian community and towards the conservative community from that moment on.
Well, that's really moving. And as somebody who also has had Jesus come into his life, I can certainly feel and appreciate that moment for you. And I have heard you on, you know, myself at an event, and I've watched some of your other events, and I'm a little, I have to think that your parents' initial upbringing, even though it wasn't overtly Christian, I have to think that your mom's influence, certainly as a Catholic herself, when it comes to matters like pro-life, and then you had gone so far pro-choice, and then only to be hit in the face with what pro-choice really meant, I'm sure that had a huge impact on you. I'm sure that those earlier experiences certainly played a key role for when you were finally ready to make that choice.
I agree with that. I do, because I was raised pro-life, and it wasn't until I started hanging out with more left-leaning young adults and teenagers when I was, you know, between 12 and 14 that I started thinking that abortion was something that was the right thing to associate with.
Well,
so
I'm sure
it was these outside influences, actually.
Sure, and I'm sure that you look back at your time in the left and have a lot of regrets and all of that. But at the same time, had you not been on that journey, you would not be where you're at now. So,
oh, absolutely.
I think that's awesome that, you know, God was still able to use you in those situations to prepare you for where you are now and where your life is going to take you now.
Exactly. Yeah. And during my time on the left, especially when I was working for Greenpeace, as a lobbyist and a grassroots organizer, I learned a lot of very valuable skills that can be used
sure.
with the conservative movement as well. And I also learned how to think like a leftist. I learned what tactics really work with the youth, and I learned messaging. I learned how to essentially cater my message to whoever it is that I am trying to reach.
Well, and
those
that's
are
definitely
some really amazing skills.
Yes, they absolutely are. In fact, that's what I would love to talk to you about in the next segment. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Farrell Nelson. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Farrell Nelson. She is a former communist activist involved with such organizations as Earth First, very radical organization, and also with Greenpeace and some others. And, you know, going out of that break there, you were talking about how important it was for your own personal journey to be where you are now, to have gone through a lot of the trainings that you did. And so you had mentioned tactics. So talk to our audience a little bit about those skills that you learned.
Yeah, absolutely. So direct action was definitely one of them. And that is essentially going to your target audience, whether that be members of Congress, whether that be, you know, heads of organizations, but being physically present there so that they can't ignore you with banners or with your own media, with your own video cameras that can actually get, you know, ask them questions, because censorship is such a big deal right now, especially in the conservative movement, to actually get these people to answer questions on camera that you can then put on your own social media platforms and get it out to the public and avoid the gatekeepers of mainstream legacy media. Another tactic is actually going to colleges and universities and tabling and passing out information there, because that is where far-left organizations really target a lot of their recruitment, is on college campuses. And so we need to provide an alternative for people. Essentially, that they're going unopposed in these locations. And there are some conservative groups, and, you know, there's Christian organizations on college campuses, but there is not enough of a presence of the conservative movement in these places that tend to be more left-leaning. And, you know, if there is going to be somebody giving a talk at a university about transitioning and their journey, we should also have somebody talking about how they detransitioned and their journey. We need to offer alternatives in the places that tend to be far left that are targeting the youth. We also really need to be focusing on building coalitions, because there's so many groups in the state that want to do something, and so they start an organization in order to solve the problem that they see, But what often ends up happening is that there's too much overlap between organizations and they're not efficient enough and they're not working together to actually create a bigger movement. And so coalition building is huge. And it's something that we should all be doing all the time, is reaching out to other groups, seeing how we can help, seeing how they can essentially plug in to what we're doing so that we can be a more effective force. Another thing is just canvassing, going door to door or going to large events that are happening in the state and passing out information, educational outreach about what's going on and how people can get involved. And we, in terms of the group that I am with Next Generation Restoration, which is a 501c3 nonprofit, we run campaigns on current issues. And one of the campaigns that we're running right now and the main fundraising we're doing is Unify Oregon, which strives to unite Oregonians by providing support and visibility to those that have been harmed from the vaccine, both by being forced to take it or by losing their livelihoods. And we have been really working to build strong coalitions and partnerships in our state and holding those accountable and that are at fault for the crimes against humanity, because that's what it is. And so we stand together with faith-based communities, freedom-loving businesses, Children's Health Defense, Oregonians for Medical Freedom, the Unite Oregon Now campaign, Free Oregon, Parents' Rights in Education, and many, 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 many others to stop the mandates. And so I bring this up because coalitions are huge.
Let me pause you there, because coalitions, that is certainly something that we see on the left and less so on the right.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what you're describing, like door-to-door campaigns, or, you know, getting on colleges there to not let the left's viewpoint go unopposed. A lot of that takes money. And the left has a tremendous amount of left-leaning money coming in, whether it's through global warming funding, which then gets filtered out to these far left groups, or you've got these multiple billionaires, you know, George Soros being the most famous, donating money. So how do we start convincing those on the right to start funding these kinds of coalitions?
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up, because I know that when the issues behind vaccine with this, with HB 2002, which is the, you know, the reproductive health bill, but it really is, you know, providing abortions to kids as young as 8 years old, puberty blockers for children. I mean, it's absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm.
When I hear a lot of pastors talk about this, they say we need to pray, and we do need to pray, but we also need direct action. We need to put our money where our mouth is. And every day people give to church and give to organizations that they support. They need to start giving to organizations that are actually doing something, that are boots on the ground, that are actually lobbying, that are actually, you know, doing direct action in what is happening in our state.
Yeah. Well, you know, David prayed and David sang songs, but he also slayed giants. And I think we have to make that our focus
exactly.
as well.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
So in terms
that is
of,
a perfect example.
Well, in terms of getting those on the right, as you're trying to build some of these coalitions, are you getting resistance and pushback from that?
You know, not really. And I think that that's because we are focusing right now on what I like to call the lowest hanging fruit. We're building coalitions with those groups that are already really aligned with the conservative movement and agree with us in terms of, you know, medical freedom, in terms of parental rights. And there aren't a lot of people that can really argue with that in the conservative movement. However, we really, in order to shift public opinion, we really need to start going out into left communities, and we really need to start building coalitions with more left-leaning groups and seeing eye to eye on things that we can agree on. And that is something that I think is a lot really hard for conservatives, because they like to remain in their echo chamber.
Yes.
And it's like that with a lot of liberals as well. They want to just remain in their tribe, in their echo chamber. They don't want to move outside of that. And so we really need to start moving away from that mentality and start putting ourselves out there.
I absolutely agree that we need to get people to start working together. And we're going to talk more about that in our final segment with Farrah Lee Nelson. Stay with us. And welcome back in our final segment now with Farrahleigh Nelson. This show has absolutely flown by, and we will definitely have her back to talk about some of the issues we didn't get around to. But Farrahleigh, in the time that we have left, we want to certainly talk about some of your current efforts. You had already mentioned Unify Oregon, and that you guys are really focused on the vaccine, and that's really helping to build some of the coalitions. In terms of, there are so many issues right now on the conservative side to tackle. Where do you think conservatives should be focusing? What are some of the priorities they should be focusing on?
Yeah, I think that the left is coming after our kids in so many different ways, in their minds, in their physical bodies. And so we really need to focus on the kids. And one aspect of that is parental rights. And it definitely goes into the vaccine mandates that are happening in the state as well, because a lot of the, even the private schools are requiring the COVID vaccine even now, even after the pandemic is officially over. My son signed up for a summer camp and they required all the kids to be fully vaccinated with COVID-19. He's 10 years old. And so they're not relenting. And the bill that I mentioned before, the HB 2002, is another example of how they're trying to remove parental consent. And it's a really big deal with medical freedom. And we also have to hold these institutions accountable, because they feel like the public opinion is on their side, that they can pretty much get away with whatever they want. And we, mandates are not the American way. Americans are free. We're free to pray. We're free to travel. We're free to work. We're free to study. We're free to question the narrative. We're free to speak our mind and free to say, no, we do not comply. And so that's why we're calling on Oregonians to work with us to stop the mandates, because it, together we can defeat this. We can defeat medical tyranny. And we're working with the Lord to hold these responsible for mass crimes against Oregonians, against all Americans, and against the world. And we do count on donations to help our legal team, who is currently working on a lawsuit, which has hundreds and hundreds of claimants on it already. And we need help to run our campaigns. So we need donations to help keep us going. We actually have an event coming up. It's called the Free Cuba event. It's actually Army Murray, who is a Cuban fugitive. She is she escaped Cuba with her family to be here, and she's absolutely disgusted by the way that things are going and heading towards communism in this country, when that's something that she escaped, real communism. Yeah. And so she is amazing at making Cuban food. So there's going to be a Cuban dinner, and it's all going to be local, high quality ingredients. And we're going to be hosting lots of fun anti-communism activities. And it's just going to be a fun night for everybody to come and support us. And
when and where is that?
That is going to be at Happy Acre Farm in Salem, Oregon, and it's going to be on July 29th. The time is still to be announced, but it should be early evening. And if you go to nextgenerationrestoration.org, I know that's a mouthful, but Next Generation with a G, like God, nextgenerationrestoration.org, and go to our campaigns page. There is event information there about it, and also on our events page as well.
Okay, and we'll definitely make sure we put that up on our iSpyRadio.com as well. And again, today's show is 13-24. That'll be down in the links and further information section down at the bottom of the page there. You had mentioned that the left is coming after our kids and parental rights. Looking back at the tactics that you've used and some of the training that you've used, what do you see as the best way to stop HB 2002?
Well, I think that just canvassing, lots and lots of canvassing, because a lot of people will see the media, the commercials on TV as a good thing. And so we need to reach people on a personal level and explain what's really going on. And I think either going door to door, going to large visibility events like the county fair, where we can go and meet people face to face, I think it's going to be a really important tactic for this year.
In the time that we have left here, too, we got about a minute and change here with you. The other organization that you mentioned is Unify Oregon. Is that going to be Oregon.com? UnifyOregon.com?
So it's going to be unifyoregon.net currently.
Okay.
And we're also trying to get unifyoregon.org, but I would go to the nextgenerationrestoration.org website for at least the next week or so until we have all of our domains purchased.
Okay. All right. Well, Farrah Lee Nelson, I want to thank you so much for your time today. And like I said, we'll go ahead and link those information and events up on iSpireRadio.com as well. Thank you for what you're doing, and we definitely look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you so much.
After our interview with Farrah Lee ended, news broke that the Senate walkout ended, despite having the win all locked up. If you heard last week's show, you heard Senator Dennis Lithgow, HB 2002 and the anti-gun bill and all of the rest of the horrible bills Democrats were pushing were dead, just continued to deny quorum, and there was nothing the Democrats could do. All Republicans had to do was stay in the car and coast downhill to the finish line. But someone grabbed the wheel and steered into the ditch. As of this report, it appears Senator Minority Leader Tim Knope blindsided his fellow Republicans, and he and at least two other Republicans gave the Democrats the bodies they needed for quorum. We don't know all the details yet, but we will bring Senator Lithgow back on to talk about this next week. From what we do know, initially, Dennis said that this was devastating and that they are heartsick and beyond frustrated. He did email us a statement which in part reads, "During our state turmoil, people want to know what happened. In a word, great effort succeeded in bringing our Senate denial of quorum to ruin. But we cannot allow ourselves to be defeated. Now is the time for drawing better men and women into our folds. We need people who will fight for constitutional principles, religious freedom, parental rights, and the Hippocratic motto, first, do no harm. I won't give up, I won't back down from the coming fight, and I pray you will continue to join with me." And I absolutely agree with Dennis. Here we just had this great interview with Farrah Lee about taking the fight to the far left, about activism and getting involved, and then right on the heels of that, we hear about the cowardly Republicans who gave up when there was no reason to do so. It's easy and tempting to think, why bother? Why keep fighting if this is the result? Remember, these kinds of events are designed to dispirit you and to make you want to stop fighting. And whether it's by design or not, doesn't really matter. What do we say about conspiracies? It doesn't matter if it's a conspiracy, the effect is the same. The only way this gets better, the only way to mitigate the problem of singular idiots is to have more Republicans in office. So if an idiot does what idiots do, it doesn't matter. They can idiot all they want and it won't make any difference. They'll simply be outweighed. In the history of the world, giving up never solved anything, which is why we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.